Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here.
And my executive, whatever, picking prowess, it's Tony Hilton.
And I'm sure we'll be hearing from Mr. Psychic, Tom Padgett, popping in any minute here. We got a big show. We got Alexander Kut of the Kia Boxing Promotions over there in the Brick City, New Jersey there, Brick City Boxing. And he's a buddy of our longtime friend here at the show, Danny Saratelli, otherwise known as the Fight Lawyer. We'll also be talking to Alex Perez, who's going to be headlining the May 31st show out in Whippany, New Jersey. And it's going to be the main event there. I don't know if they've announced who he's fighting yet, but he's going to be in the main event. And we're going to be talking to him at the 9:15 slot there. We've got plenty to talk about up until then. Might as well start with the boxing, since we don't have my psychic MMA buddy on yet. So Floyd Mayweather versus Marcos Maidana is in the books, and it looks like we're going to get a rematch, even though it doesn't look like there was much controversy over the win, not as much as Pacquiao Brad wanted.
I didn't watch it until last night. I was out on Saturday night. I had a couple of friends that are the given my word that I would be there for. So I'm at the one event Saturday night, and I'm checking my phone, and I'm getting receipts coming over like, Madonna taking it to him. Oh my God, I got him up 4-1. This and that. And as the fight was progressing, I was seeing people's feeds, but it was mainly predominantly the rounds that Madonna was doing better that was getting commented on, which kind of makes sense because the fact it was unexpected. So when the fight was over, and I had people saying it's a draw. I had people saying they thought Madonna won. Mayweather gets the decision, and the one judge had it 9-3, 117-111. So I read two prevailing notions from both big-time Mayweather fans. One of them saying he fought Mayweather lost, and Madonna earned the decision. The other one saying that, and this guy is very pious. I take everything he says with a grain of salt. But he said he was hard pressed to give Madonna even 3 rounds. So I kind of went in between both of them. So I finally got to watch it last night. Somebody had given me a burned copy of the fight, which was burned a copy of the British broadcasting broadcast. With the British announcers. And I had a preconceived notion going into the fight. I thought Madonna did well early, but I think a lot of it was him doing better than expected. And I think was a lot of it was Mayweather kind of standing in front of him and putting his back to the rope. Now, after the fight, Mayweather said that he was doing it to give the fans a better show. I don't know if I exactly buy that. As good as he looked in neutralizing Alvarez and Guerrero, those are fighters that almost, as you said, got hypnotized by his movement and his motions and tried to land the perfect punch. Where Madonna was like, fuck landing the perfect punch. I'm going to try to land anything. And okay, some of the stuff he did was pretty foul-filled. You know, I mean, okay, at one point, looked in his knee, that was pretty low. But the other things he said, if you look, if he threw his overhand right, if he didn't land it, he would come up at the top of his forearm or elbow on Mayweather's head. You know, he was hitting that. He landed low blows. He fought a very left-style fight. He was not mesmerized. He just threw punches. And I know a guy that came out and said the other day that is that the blueprint to beat Mayweather? To not try to land the perfect punch, but just try to land punches and, you know, overwhelm them. Especially
now. Yeah, actually, the Showtime analyst mentioned that it was going to take 100 punches per round to beat Mayweather, and that's what Maidana had planned on going in, I think. And when he was throwing that much, I think he threw exactly 100 in the first round, and he was doing well. But the problem was, if you wanted to score any round for Maidana over Floyd, you had to overlook his sloppiness, you know, because a lot of those punches, they landed, but, you know, they were slapping because he was just trying to throw in volume. The one thing I noticed was that whenever he threw those sort of over-the-head hooks that are a very untraditional type of punch, it's kind of like the opposite of an uppercut. He was landing, and he was hitting Floyd, but he came in a lot with his head down, and he was not accurate with his punches, and that allowed Floyd to get back into the fight. If he had his head up, if somebody could teach him to keep his head up and aim some of those punches, I think he could win against Floyd. But that style, all it did was frustrate Floyd until he could figure it out and start to adjust to it. And by the way, we have Psychic Tom.
All right. Yeah, I've just been waiting to hear the insights here, and then I can add mine.
And one thing I noticed, too, is if you look at Maidana's actual output, throwing shots, he threw way more shots in the body, I think, than the head. And Mayweather was really not running like he did in a lot of his fights. And he said something to the effect of, you know, I'm going to fight a different fight this time. And he really should have been running for one time in his life. That was the best strategy, because you want to get out of the range of those punches. You don't want that guy to push you up against the ropes and beat you, whether it be with headbutts, low blows, or punches.
All right. Let me ask both you guys this. Do you think that he felt pressure, and Mayweather's not been the kind of guy that responds to fans' pressure as a rule, but do you think he felt the criticism that he wouldn't engage and he deliberately adopted that style that I'm going to be far less mobile, or do you think Maidana made it happen? What do you guys think?
Tom, I think it's more of a situation where Maidana made it happen. And as I was saying before you were able to join this plan, I said, you look at some of Mayweather's previous fights, opponents that are naturally aggressive, guys like Canelo Alvarez, guys like Pablo Garcia, guys like Victor Ortiz, naturally aggressive guys like Arturo Gatti. Gatti tried to box with him, and he said, why did you do that? Mayweather has made it very subtle, and as I was telling Rich, I got to watch the fight last night. A colleague of mine burned a copy of it, but he burned the British BBC broadcast. So I was looking to the British announcers, and they were having this box of tea, and they called this while watching the fight. But the one guy made a very good point. He goes, Mayweather has a habit of hypnotizing his performance. The Alvarez. Alvarez is almost afraid to throw a punch. He didn't want to get countered. Looking for the perfect punch. Maidana was like, I'm not looking for the perfect punch. I'm just looking to throw punches. If you go back to my analysis last week, the one thing I said on there that he would have to do is employ the Marciano style and land his fist on flesh, whether it's shoulders, whether it's biceps, whether it's forearm, whether
right.
it's in the flank area. So Maidana was doing that, and he had no problem with following through with an overhand right with a forearm. He had no problem landing, you know, to land fist on flesh. That's the game plan that you have to use. Now, I think a lot of it was not just Floyd saying, I decided to give the fans a good show. I think it was Maidana forcing a good show.
Mm-hmm.
I think he wasn't hypnotized by Mayweather. At least early he wasn't.
You know, yeah, that's going to set up an interesting dynamic in the rematch, if there is one, because normally it seems like in the first fight, the guy that's the aggressive brawler has the edge. Now, we can look at Joe Frazier and Ali won. We can look at Duran Leonard won. I'm sure there's other examples, but you guys get the point. But it's this more skilled fighter or boxer, to be precise, who can make the adjustments in the rematch. However, if this was really not Floyd's idea to stand here, this is fascinating about a rematch.
You know what I think about that today, we were talking about it. You think there will be a rematch in September? I said, yeah, very likely there will be. And I said, I think this time Mayweather really dominates. I think he figured them out a little bit, and he was then, as the second half of the fight was coming on, was timing them coming in. The reason Mayweather is so used to guys comprehensively attacking them that he didn't have a chance to get off this. Madonna wasn't giving him that chance early. I think he threw Mayweather off as much as he smothered him. So, what I think it's going to be a situation. If you go back to the fight when Mayweather first fought Jose Luis Castillo, and Castillo put on a lot of pressure. A lot of people think Castillo won that first fight. The second fight, Mayweather, instead of, he was going to be mesmerized, and he was going to give him a chance to fight from the outside, he had to time him before he came in. And I think that's what you see happen in the rematch.
Yeah, and see, that kind of fits into the thesis I was talking about, that it does seem like the more skilled technician has the edge in the rematch.
By the way, Oscar De La Hoya said after the fight that Mayweather should be 43-3.
I'm sure he's vindicating himself. I'm sure he was vindicating Castillo. And I guess this fight that he should have lost in De La Hoya's eyes.
Yeah, I don't know if you can really make a good argument that Maidana won the fight, but
I was saying to Rich before you joined the show, I was out last week, so I wasn't watching the fight live, but I was in the seat through my phone. And over the first few rounds, my phone was blowing up with people saying, oh, my God, Maidana's bringing it to him. Oh, my God, this fight is great. Oh, my God, Maidana's got all this pressure on him. Maidana's got him in the road. Maidana's up 4-1 or 5-1, whatever it was. But as Mayweather started controlling the action, I wasn't seeing the feeds on there. So it was almost like people were like, oh, this is what I'm expecting, so I don't need to post about it. And then when the fight was over, I got two completely different arguments. One guy, who's a Mayweather loyalist, came out and told me flat out he thought Floyd lost the fight. The other guy is very biased of Floyd Miller, and basically, in his eyes, Floyd can do no wrong. And he was saying it was hard-pressed to give Madonna 3 rounds. So I kind of went with a middle-of-the-line stance when I watched fight last night, and the first early rounds were close because Madonna put a lot of pressure on, and I think people would give him those rounds, especially watching it live as it was unfolding, because I don't think they were expecting him to do that well. Not that he was winning, he was doing better than expected. And you will see that sometimes where a fighter that is so good and is so dominant has a little bit of an off night. So much, he's better, and he looks a little bit more human. Now, I know some people came out and said maybe this is the blueprint on how to beat Mayweather, which is just a lot of pressure, Don't let him have time to box. Don't let him have time to hit his shots. Rough him up on the inside. But I think Mayweather would clearly win the rematch. And in what De La Hoya was saying, the only fight that I could ever say that Mayweather did not win was the first Castillo fight. I watched and I scored the De La Hoya-Mayweather fight, and Mayweather won 7-5. De La Hoya did really good in the rounds he won, but he lost 7 of the 12 rounds. And in the 10-point he lost 5.
You know, Tony, as far as your friends calling, and they were so pumped up about it, there is an old cliche about sometimes we see what we want to see, and maybe that had something to do with it, too. I mean, and I've fallen into that sometimes myself. I think we all can sometimes. You try to guard against it. But sometimes you can get caught up in the moment, and that's the whole basis of crowd psychology. And I could imagine, did they mention who the crowd was for? Because sometimes the crowd can sway a lot of emotions too. Did you guys hear anything about that? Was it like a pro Mayweather crowd or the other way around?
No, it was definitely a pro Madonna crowd because I watched the fight last night and you could hear the chant very very loudly. Ole 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 Chino Chino Chino. Very adamantly, predominantly. A Madonna crowd. Reminded me kind of when Ricky Hatton went there to fight Mayweather, and all you heard the whole time was the Winter Wonderland Ricky Hatton song, even if he's getting bounced off the canvas.
Yeah.
Now, another story that we didn't actually end up talking about last week because it came in just after the show, but Mayweather had a few distractions before the fight. Regarding his ex-girlfriend, this is a pretty big deal. We're not really a gossip show here, but this one, because apparently a lot of people knew that he split up from Chantel Jackson, who he called Miss Jackson. I saw her at the Ortiz fight open workout when I was in Vegas. And she was rocking the big ring. She was supposedly engaged to him and looked pretty good. She was following him around. And, one of the reporters, she started giving shit to one of the reporters at one point when Floyd was going back and forth with him. But now it came out through Floyd Mayweather's tweets that he aborted his twin babies. And he showed everything from the paperwork to the ultrasound on these babies. And so and there was also a $10 million diamond ring he had on. He got when they were engaged in 2013. I don't think that's right. I think it was before that. Anyway, so what ended up happening was, I guess, Floyd found out before anything could be done about it and obviously left her behind and went back to the harem lifestyle, I guess you could say. Because I remember shortly after, you know, she just kind of disappeared off the radar in one of those all-access shows, like six different ladies and entourage were on the show, so... He obviously didn't wait too long moving on, but obviously it's got to be weighing on his mind that he would put that out right before the fight like that. He was just a couple days before the fight.
When we were talking about the fight, and I know my preview didn't really come out until after we were off the air, but... So this is one of the weaknesses I pointed out on the Mayweather was that I think he's got too much going on in his mind right now. You know, okay, the guy loves attention, and the guy loves what he does. Okay, he loves what he does, and he loves, you know, really getting into it. He lives the life. You know, he's as I see it in the Alvarez article, he is a good player, boxing. He's always out there, and he's wheeling and dealing, and jet flying, and then he's riding, and he's feeling, you know. But at the same time, your mind can only do so many things. And I think that was one of the reasons he said that his mind had nothing to do on Marcos Madonna. His mind was talking about Miss Jack. His mind was talking about buying the Clippers. His mind was jumping on his private jet and flying out somewhere for some commercial or something or other. His mind was, you know, the NCAA tournament. mind was, I think, everywhere it needed to be but the fight. And that only is ever going to amplify.
Okay, but yeah. Really, is this something new? I mean, his life's been a three-ring circus many times before, do you think? Maybe Father Time is catching up to him, and he can't afford to think like
Absolutely.
That now.
I mean, what are some of the things you lose as you get older? You lose timing, you lose reflexes. You get guys like, you know, George Foreman that, you know, did so well because they had punching power.
Right.
You have guys like Bernard Hopkins. So if you go and you look at Hopkins when he was 20, as opposed to when he was, Hopkins really started to change around 2003. I'll tell you the fight. It was 2003-2004. It was the fight, and his third fight was Robert Allen. Because even before that, Hopkins was coming up in his career. I remember watching him a lot. Even though he was a very good technician, had a tremendous killer instinct, and he was very aggressive. He threw a lot of right hands. And even when he won the title, I mean, he was, I forget the guy that he won the title from, he was a fighter from Ecuador. And he battered him pretty good, most of his early defenses. Austin's first title defense was 24 seconds. This is a guy that has knocked the man out in 10 years now. 24 seconds, knocking out guys like Joe Mixon. He's tearing guys up, even fights for 2 pounds. Very aggressive. And then he boxed more against Trinidad. Because he's smart enough to do that. But if he had a couple more fights, he was very aggressive in his fight with William Joppy in 03. When he fought Robert Allen in 04, he was strictly a boxer. Even against De La Hoya before he stopped him, he was keeping his distance early, and he was boxing. He was, and this is then. He became a tactician. But if you look, he neutralizes guys now by making that into a fight that's not exciting, by making it into a fight with fewer punches being thrown. The guys that beat him are either guys that were just a little bit quicker, but he's definitely lost the reflexes. He just was able to win on smart. Other guys that fought later in their careers, Archie Moore, George Foreman, guys like that, they won because they were tremendous punchers.
Well, another part of that story mentioned, Santel Jackson, was Floyd Giant prison was mentioned. I know that I've said on the show before that he refused to eat prison food, but this actually outlines exactly what he did eat while he was in there. Apparently, he refused anything they gave him except for maybe a piece of bread or an orange here and there. But what he did eat, kind of funny, chili cheese Fritos, candy bars, predominantly Snickers, ramen noodles, and beef jerky. So he's eating like the rest of us. no actual meals. And there was reports of him losing a lot of weight in jail, too. But I think that's kind of interesting, his choice of food. Because, you know, you see, especially in the All Access shows, you see all these people with their nutritionists and stuff. And, Floyd, when he was doing his open workout, was drinking soda, which I thought was very weird. You know, because that's going to dehydrate you. And you're sitting there trying to box, and you know, you're sweating. You should be rehydrating yourself, and you're drinking Mountain Dew. It just doesn't make sense. But, you know, obviously something's working for him. But, I don't know. That blows my mind that he would have that kind of a diet and look that good. All of us can't be that lucky, right?
Genetics. You know, because you hear in the fitness world that the I call it the much aligned misaligned crunch. You know, the crunch is considered don't do it. It's hard on your back. Well, from what I understand, Floyd's ab routine consists of nothing but crunches. He says he does about 500 a day in training. So, genetics.
Yeah, and then the I don't know if this is a joke or not. It kind of sounds like a joke since it's at the end of the article. But, you know, it's in a serious article and everything else is serious, so I guess you got to take it as face value here. But it says at the end, Mayweather also suffered a rib cage injury at the the end of his first week at the facility, which he attributed to reaching down to grab a bottle of lotion. Whatever.
I've heard that one before.
Yeah, that was kind of funny to read. Well, apparently true. Anyway, Floyd Mayweather Sr. weighed in after the fight, too, and had some very interesting commentary. He said, "I think it was a superb, masterful boxer fighting an MMA fighter. He was an MMA fighter. He hit him in the balls. He hit him all around on his hips, hit him in the back of the head, headbutted his eye, and beat him in the back of the head. Man, come on. He doesn't deserve nothing. With all that stuff Mendoza did, hitting below the belt, twisting the arm, hitting behind the head, hitting him with the head, and busting that eye, if it was Floyd, I wouldn't fight him again."
Well, hey, I told you guys, I said, you're talking about a fighter that's not known for his adherence to the rules.
Right. And you actually predicted the eighth round would be the foul, that would be called. And he hit him with the big low blow in the eighth round, so
yeah.
That was interesting. I kind of was saying to myself when I was reading that for the first time, geez, you know, more and more specific here. He's actually predicting the round of a foul.
That's got to be a first. That's got to be a first.
You know what? And part of the reason I do what I do is if you go back and you guys read my very first preview, which was Mayweather De La Hoya. I'll try to keep that one wrapped up, but I was wrong. And I definitely don't want you to, and Rich, I want you to, if you find it on the archives, I want you to delete it and burn it and purge it forever, my De La Hoya Pacquiao prediction. Because I had one fighter win another round for a devastating knockout. I was at the wrong fighter. But if you go back and you read the previous article, yeah, I would try to give a round-by-round account of what I thought was going to happen, but as I started really getting on late, I said, you know, I think people would like, if I tried to really get out on the limb, because anybody can say, oh, he's going to land some good shots, he might hurt him a little bit, maybe he'll drop him in this round. I said, no, I'm going to start really picking him. I want to put a score. I want to put a what round of the referees into the corner. So, Hey, I'm thinking about stopping this fight. I want to put it around the doctor comes in the corner to check a cut. I want to really get out of the limb and set myself up for failure, or really set myself up to look smarter than I am.
Also, after the fight, Muhammad Ali tweeted that he wants to see the Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather fight now, so that's another one to the bandwagon there. But actually, while I was watching this fight, my first thing that came to mind after Maidana was frustrating Floyd was, man, you know, Manny would definitely be punching more and faster and more accurate, so that would definitely be than I thought, because, I mean, Maidana, the number one strength he had is unpredictability because, like you said, you know, he's a dirty fighter a little bit. He's a roughhouser and just throws from unorthodox angles. And he knew, just like he wrote in the preview, that he had to put Mayweather on the ropes. And Mayweather only really was showing dominance when he was in the center of the ring, which you said he had to do in your preview. So spot on there, too, but Manny is going to be one step above Maidana, and I think that would be a very interesting fight. But at the same time, if Manny fights the way he fought in his last fight, no way he's going to win against Mayweather. He's got to be way more active and, you know, think about the power more. I think really his religious come to Jesus deal with you know, getting rid of the cockfighting operations and bars over there in the Philippines and trying to recommit himself to the good book there and all that has made him kind of soft on some of his opponents, and he's abandoned the quest to knock people out. And I thought, like I said, he was going to knock Bradley out in the eighth round of the last fight there, and he had a chance and didn't take it. He backed off.
Watching his thing in the Pacquiao Bradley fight that I was impressed with, and I told this thing, I watched it live at the MGM Grand, and I'll say it again when I watched the television replay. He threw some of those overhand lefts with bad intention, and it reminded me of some of the shots that he used to knock Ricky Hatton out cold. I just think Bradley was able to take them better, but there was no less velocity on those shots. But talking about overhand punches, I just sent you guys, because we're talking about Maidani using the overhand right. Hey, he threw a good overhand right, but it sure as hell wasn't as good as the one I sent you guys.
I saw that. I didn't watch it yet because we're on the air. But
yeah, you didn't like it. Because I gave you a shout-out in it, Rich.
Yeah, I like the last the comment afterwards. He ain't so dangerous anymore. He's a fucking douchebag. Teddy Pav. Get him back on someday. But anyway, we've spent 30 minutes talking about Floyd Mayweather versus Maidana here on a related subject, so we've got to slip in some other news before we have our guests on. At 9:15 here, we've got a couple guests from the New Jersey area, Alex the Brick City Bullet Perez, and he's going to be fighting in the main event of Fight in Whippany, New Jersey on the 31st of May. Going to be fighting for Kia Boxing Promotions, which is promoted by Alexander Cook. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Cook. I guess it's KP. So it's got only two different ways to pronounce that, I think. But it's one of them. So we'll be talking to them at 9:15, but until then, we do have a lot to cover. We've got three big MMA cards coming up this weekend. Matt Brown versus Eric Silva in the big UFC card is the main event. Brown is 18-11. Silva is 16-4. And I think Matt was sort of good. I read the headline the other day and read the whole story that he's the underdog in this fight. You know, he has more wins. He does have 7 more losses. So at the same time, I think his game has just totally improved tremendously since he got into the UFC. And he's just a gritty guy. He impresses me every time he goes into the cage. Silva is the same. Right? He's a tough guy. He's capable of a knockout, capable of a submission. Yeah, I think this is going to be a really good fight.
Okay, well, Brady, I would say my crystal ball says bet on the underdog on this one.
Yeah. All right. You heard it here first.
That's it.
Another guy from, actually, I think both of these guys are from Strikeforce, if I remember correctly. But Lorenz Larkin and Kostas Philippou are in the co-main event. Both of them have over a dozen wins. Larkin has 14 wins. Kostas has, exactly a dozen, 12 wins. And Larkin has 2 losses. Philippou has 4 losses. So it's pretty decent matchmaking there as far as on paper goes. But to see how the actual fight goes. Then we have Eric Koch versus Darren Cruikshank. Koch is 14-3. Cruikshank is 14-4. Again, pretty decent on paper. We've got Neil Magny, who's 9-3, fighting Tim Means, who has 20 wins. 5 losses and 1 draw. It's kind of an interesting fight there. We've got Sola Palele, who we were supposed to have on as a guest, but couldn't deal with the time difference there. But maybe we'll revisit that at some point. Sola Palele, he's 20-3, fighting Ulan Potts, who's 8-1. And we've got Chris Carriasso, who's 16-5, fighting Luis Smolka, 7-0. And then Ed Herman's back in action. He's 21-10, fighting Rafael Natal, who's 17-5-1. Kyoji Horiguchi, 12-1, will be fighting Darryl Montague, 13-3. Jan Cabral putting his undefeated record on the line. He's 11-0. He's fighting Zach Cummings from The Ultimate Fighter not too long ago. He's 16-3. And we've got Eddie Wineland, This is a pretty interesting undercard fight. This is actually the capacity to be a main event, or a main card fight, I should say. But Eddie Wineland's 21-9-1 fighting Johnny Eduardo, who's 6-9. A lot of experience in that fight. And also Nick Lentz has over 20 wins there, 24-6-2. He's fighting in the third fight of the night against Manny Gamburian, who's 13-7. I believe we've had this guy on our show before, Justin Morales, who's 11-5, will be fighting Ben Wall, who's 7-1-1. That's Justin Morales' name. Seems familiar. I think we've talked to him before, but I haven't researched that, so don't quote me on that. And the first fight of the night, Anthony Lapsley, 23-6, fighting Albert Fuminoff, who's 12-2. So all around that looks like a pretty decent card. I'll definitely be watching. Then we've got a couple guys we definitely had on the show before, fighting in the co-main event of MFC 40, Crown Kings up there in Canada, Edmonton, Alberta there. We've got Tom Galicchio in the main event, 18-8, fighting Kurt Southern, 13-5, who we got to talk to for a second before we lost contact there. Then we've got Sam Alvey, Smiling Sam, and Wes Wofford, both of our former guests there, who had a little back and forth for a second. And,
we had them both on the same show, didn't we?
Yep.
Now, let me ask you, is that a first?
I don't think so. I think we've done that before, but maybe not in an MMA situation, but boxing, I'm sure we've had people who are, you know, on the same show who are fighting each other.
Well, I know we did. I don't remember the name, but I remember that. So I remember it's like, do we have any words for your opponent? And, it wasn't going to be real trash talk, but it was, it's going to be a good show, this and that, and it'll be cool to watch.
Sam Alvey is 21-5. Wes Wofford 9-4. What the discrepancy there in experience? And Sam said he's beaten Wes Nile before, and that's Swofford's nickname, Wes Nile Swofford's. Again, I remember that part. Then we've got Jesse Brock also on the card. He's 16-8. Fighting Kevin Kroon, who's 14-4. Bill Widler, 8-5, fighting Victor Balamaki, 17-8. Jonatas Novaes, 11-5, fighting Andrew McKinnis, who's 4-1. Marcus Edwards, 6-2, fighting Aaron Gallant, who's 6-5. Shane Campbell, 8-2, fighting Unknown Fighter. Another TBA substitution there. We've got John Barnard, also in the third fight, fighting on here. On this card, he's 2-0, fighting Corey Gower, who's 4-2. And in the first two fights, a couple guys with no record, pro debut, and actually three of the four fighters in the first two have no record, and then Mike Hayes in the first fight is 0-1, so not much there to talk about. Then, of course, we've got another Bellator fight card coming up May 9th, tomorrow. That's also in Canada, Ontario. Main event there is Daniel Michael, 33-8, and Desmond Green, who's 11-2. That should be an interesting fight. We got co-main event Marlon Sandro, who's 24-5-1, fighting Chris Horodecki. He's 20 wins, 4 losses, and 1 draw. We got Marius Zaromskis on the card, 19-8, fighting Vaughn Anderson, 16-2-1. Rafael Butler, 8-0, fighting Rossborough, who's 23-18. John Alessio back in action. He's 34-17, fighting Eric Wisely, who's 22-8. Brian Rogers, 10-6, fighting Adrian Miles, 14-5. And we'll leave the rest, the preliminaries, off. A lot more to talk about. He's back in the news for some shenanigans, I guess you call them, with the rankings, specifically the UFC lightweight rankings. A couple guys got thrown off the list recently for inactivity, Nate Diaz being one of them. which is almost self-explanatory considering his recent behavior on top of not fighting recently. And also T.J. Grant, who, in a way, to explain, both were removed due to inactivity. He said, early on, we'd let Dominic Cruz hold the title and stay in the rankings as long as we did. It's unfair to the guys who are active. Nate Diaz is in the position where he's turning down fights, hasn't accepted any fights, and has been inactive. We don't know how long he's going to be inactive, so take him off the rank. When he comes in and fights his next fight, they'll rank him again after his fight. So this is actually a new policy, but actually hasn't been had as much implemented with much consistency. As Dominic Cruz is actually still in the top 15, so you use him as an example and still hasn't removed him from the rankings. So obviously there's some history with Dana White and Nate, with Nate asking for his release and wanting more money. And he just says, he actually mentioned that Nate said he doesn't turn down fights because nobody responds. Just because you don't respond doesn't mean you didn't turn down the fight. He says, no, not responding means you turned it down. So he says also, I don't know how long we're going to play this game, but there's no sense in hurting the other fighters that are staying active and working their way up the rankings for a guy who was inactive, and we don't know when he's going to fight again. So he's still under contract and still one of the top lightweights in the world, just isn't ranked as one. And we talked last week a little bit about the episode of The Ultimate Fighter that I didn't see. I didn't see last night's either, but I did catch up on the week before, and I sent you guys a little clip of Dana White finally admitting that he knows nothing.
Yeah, that was classic.
If you find it hard to believe that Dana White admitted that he knows nothing, just listen to the exact quote from the show right here.
You might as well have me in your corner or somebody else that knows nothing.
So yeah, he could have said someone that knows nothing, but instead someone else that knows nothing. How revealing was that?
It was a little Freudian slip. I don't think anybody else caught it, but
yeah.
Once I heard that, I said, I got to record this.
My God.
As well have me in your corner. So, you know, now a lot of these MMA fighters who get criticized by Dana White can go to that clip and replay it and say, yeah, well, at least I know more than this guy. Anyway. So I was thrilled to hear that. For once, he admitted he doesn't know enough to even corner a fighter. When he comes across, when he criticizes people like he knows everything, the truth hurts. But when you say it yourself. So, Anthony Johnson, Mr. Rumble, already has a new opponent after his big fight against Phil Davis. He was successful in his return to the UFC after a little bit of an absence. Now he's slated to fight Antonio Rogério Nogueira, a.k.a. Little Nog. And it's going to be at UFC on Fox 12, July 26th, out in San Jose, California. And it's actually the first bout announced for that show. And it's going to be a pretty interesting matchup. Nogueira's actually pulled out of his last couple fights due to injury. So.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling this fight could get very ugly, very quick.
And Rumble's looking really good. I don't know if he's changed his number, but I probably still have contact information for him if he hasn't. So we'll definitely try to get him back on the show. And I actually was looking through the audio files the other day and found his audio recording from that show. So it'll be interesting to go back and listen to that someday. So Rumble has a new opponent. And another former guest of ours is in the news, Chris Lytle, who is talking about coming out of retirement, but not to do MMA. Apparently, and I swear, I mentioned this before, this possibility, but nobody had ever talked about it. I swear that I threw his hat in the ring before he threw his own hat in the ring, but apparently he's going to fight Roy Jones Jr., or is at least in negotiation fight him in a boxing.
Well, my first reaction on that one, Christopher, you know, Roy may be past his prime, but this is not MMA. This is boxing.
Right. But Lytle has way more boxing experience than any of the other guys Roy Jones Jr. has mentioned the possibility of fighting. So.
Okay. Now, my question about that, and I confess to being distracted today, who is on Lytle's boxing record? Does anyone stand out?
I can look it up on BoxRec in a minute here, but he does have a 13-1-1 record as a pro boxer, with seven of those wins ending by KO or TKO. And it does mention here in the article that his last match was a seventh-round TKO over Omar Pittman in June of 2005. So obviously he hasn't fought in almost 10 years in a boxing match. But, you know, if he's staying in shape, doing what he's supposed to do, that shouldn't really matter. Well, it doesn't compare, obviously, to Roy Jones Jr.'s experience.
Yeah, I kind of think it might matter, but maybe I'm wrong.
So I'm going to look that up, but apparently they're in negotiations, and the match would simply be one fight, not the start of a new career for Lytle, anyway. And Jones actually used to be Lytle's favorite boxer, so that would be a dream come true for him to test himself against.
I kind of wonder what's in it for Jones, because I don't know if it's going to be a big money fight necessarily. So you kind of think that maybe Jones is in that situation of really nothing to gain and everything to lose. Of course, maybe he doesn't have a lot to lose at this stage of his career. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, for Jones, I think basically, his motivation is, I want to fight an MMA fighter. I don't care who it is, but it's got to be a name. And you've got to prove that boxers are better athletes, even though we've all talked about this before, that, you know, a fight between the two disciplines, whether you go in the cage or in the boxing ring, really doesn't prove a lot.
Well, I don't know why we have to keep reinventing the wheel all the time on this. I mean, now, if it's in the cage, I'm betting on Lytle. If it's in a boxing ring, I'm betting on Roy. I mean, this is not complicated. And I didn't know that Roy had professed such a desire to fight an MMA fighter. Well, then maybe he could go in a cage. But he wants to fight an MMA fighter in a boxing ring under boxing rules, right?
Right.
What I see so much is that the only cross matchups we've seen so far, Boston versus Mixed Martial Artists, were situations like you've had guys like I'm with Melton Bowen, who was a middling heavyweight except I don't even know if he was in an octagon at the time. He was in the very first few years of UFC, and he got tapped out with an armbar. He had James Tony, absolutely dreadful out there. You got other guys. Ray Mercer had very limited success. Mercer was the only one that really had any success, and he was limited to success. So, but now you have a lot of. I think what Jones is trying to do more than anything is almost, you know, take the side of boxing, to defend boxing. Because now, in a lot of fans' eyes, especially fans that are more pro UFC, they're coming out and saying, okay, you put one of your boxers, James Toney, in against one of our guys, and look, he got dominated. You put Ray Mercer, who was a world champ, he was mediocre. So that shows we are better than you, our team is superior. But what I think Jones wants to do more than anything is save the sport of boxing. And come out there and say, you know what? We've come to your arena, and now you come to ours.
Well, okay, and that's a good point, but yet I can't imagine, I don't care how hardcore an MMA fan is, this is a whole separate animal. I mean, we understand both sports have their differences, and I just can't imagine, that's a good way to look at it, but I just can't imagine someone that hasn't boxed in over 10 years coming into boxing, or like even Anderson Silva. Apparently we had this Roy Jones Jr. lottery. I guess Quentin Jackson wanted to fight him, and we know that Anderson Silva wanted to fight him. But if it's done under boxing rules, my money is on Roy.
Well, it's obviously a fight for the money, for Lytle. I mean, Roy Jones Jr. obviously doesn't need money. He's got he actually has an MMA show on this weekend. He does the Square Ring promotion, and he's making probably good money from that. But I did bring up Chris Lytle's boxing record here, and he's got some interesting characters on his record. Probably the best record of anybody he's fought was a guy he beat by unanimous decision back in 2004. A guy named Jonathan Korn, who was 44-8-1 at the time. And it's actually one of his only, or maybe, actually, yeah, he's only got three total fights outside of Indiana, and that was in Minnesota. And he's got some real serious opponents. Emphasis on the opponents on this record. Reggie Strickland was one of them. And the guy had a record at the time of 64 wins, 256 losses, and 15 draws.
Okay, how many losses, Rich?
256. And
you know, you gotta wonder where the commission's at. I mean, my God.
This was
one of Lytle's opponents, correct?
Yes, and he didn't retire until 2005, and he actually fought Tavares Cloud, and one of the best guys he fought in his last, one of his, not his very last, but in his last year of fighting, and he actually fought our last guest, Randall Bailey, back in 2003, won, and lost by unanimous decision there. Randall was 26-3. He's boxed a lot of who's, but doesn't have any wins. His last win was actually October 2004. No, it was September of 2004 against Tyrone Roberts, who was 6-0 at the time. And that was a unanimous decision win. And Mike Stone, you got a TKO against Mike Stone back in September of 26. That was his last knockout. But he actually ended his career with a record of 66 wins, 276 losses, and 17 draws, with a KO, winning KOs, 14 winning KOs, and 25 losing KOs.
You know, now I know there's probably no way to figure this out now, but I wonder if he had the same brain trust, you know, the same trainer through all this, the same manager, and because you'd have to think a compassionate trainer would say that's it, this can't go on. But I don't know.
Well, it looked like he was fighting 6 and 8 rounders, or actually mostly 6 rounders at the end of his career. But that's not the only opponent here for Lytle. In his third fight of his career, he fought Donnie Pendleton, who was at 13 wins, 140 losses, and 4 draws.
How could this be? I mean, it's almost like you can't... I'm out of words.
Fights after that, he fought a guy... This is for a title, believe it or not. The Indiana Boxing Association light heavyweight title fought a guy named John Moore, who was at 11 wins, 48 losses, and 1 draw, and fought the same guy again for the same title 2 fights later, won by unanimous decision instead of TKO like he won the first time. And then in the fight after Moore, he fought a guy who was having his poor debut, knocked him out in the first round, so... He had quite an easy road up to fighting Jonathan Korn there. Another opponent he fought was Verdell Smith in his second-to-last fight. In November of 2004, he fought Verdell Smith, who was 44-51-3. That was a unanimous decision win for him.
Okay, I think these numbers are speaking for themselves, that Roy Jones Jr. will be a whole separate animal here.
Yeah.
Woo! I mean, I'm starting to think that I don't know if this is going to go past the first couple rounds. I mean, Chris is a tough guy. I've always loved his attitude, loved his style, but this, I'm not liking any of this at all. Wow.
Well, I think it's, like I said, it's just like an audition, basically, for Roy Jones Jr. to show that he can hang in there with an MMA fighter. And in this situation, it's a guy who's been on the shelf for a while. So it's obviously going to be easier than fighting a guy like Rampage Jackson, who's active. I still think someday he will fight Anderson Silva. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, and as we've talked about before, it's probably not going to happen as far as UFC is concerned, because they don't let their fighters do any kind of cross-sports activity in anything organized anyway. So we'll have to wait until he decides to retire or is thrown out. Just kind of a hard decision. He never gets thrown out of the UFC after all he's done for the organization, but stranger things have happened. We'll see. Getting back to boxing, we've got a couple boxing stories. Real boxing, not gimmick matches. Terrence Crawford has signed up to fight for the WBO title, his own WBO title on the line against Zoriorkis Gamboa. It's going to bring boxing back to Omaha. What?
Crawford's a good fighter. He knows how much Gamboa really wants to fight anymore.
Oh, okay. And actually, I think Gamboa was caught up in that whole Balco Labs deal with Barry Bonds. He was one of those guys on the list, so hopefully there's a lot of testing for this. And another story, Julio Diaz announced his retirement. Called it a day after consecutive losses to Amir Khan, Sean Porter, and Keith Thurman. And he also had a couple brothers, Joel and Antonio, who had successful boxing careers. And now he's retiring, leaving the sport. Best wishes to him. We got some fights this weekend to talk about. Of course, the big heavyweight matchup between Chris Areola and Bermain Stiverne. I did want to mention, we forgot to talk about the co-main event there the other day. Amir Khan versus Luis Collazo.
Would I have that one wrong?
And Khan showed a little bit different style. He's had a long layoff, and he seemed like he was using his jab a lot more. Seemed more fluid, a little bit more active. I don't think he displayed the kind of talent that it's going to take to even match up with Floyd Mayweather if he's hoping for that to be his next fight after the rematch between McDonough and Floyd. And Collazo? Collazo could be added to the list of people I've been criticizing the last few weeks for not keeping their damn hands up. And I guess we all got to get our heads together and figure out some kind of invention other than duct tape to promote hands-up defense for these guys. And I've said this a million times. You can fight with one hand down if you're good at head movement and bobbing and weaving and fainting, changing levels. But if you're going to stand there and stalk somebody, you got to at least keep one hand up or both hands up. One hand up while you're punching or both hands up while you're knocking. And I think I saw Luis Collazo put both hands up once in that whole fight. And Amir Khan was like 10 feet away from him when he did it. So I don't know what the heck these guys are thinking, especially a veteran like Collazo. You know, you just cannot go in there to a boxing match and think that you can get by without any defense. And even Floyd was using the George Foreman defense a little bit in his fight. And straying away from his shoulder roll technique. So you really gotta look at either that type of defense or the traditional both hands up, or even Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson used to keep his hands by his chin. and so you could just move it up, you know, a couple inches to block his eye or his chin or whatever. And, you know, these guys today, they think they can get away with, you know, just leaving their chin wide open to be hit. And, you know, even if that's a tactic to bring a guy in, you got to punch him. And Luis just looked like he was lost in there. Just did not show that what he was capable of, at least. And we also had Julian Love beat Marco. What, Tony? You're fading out there. Say that again. Yeah. Yeah, he definitely has done better in the past. We also had Julian Love beat Marco Antonio Parabon. That was a fight I really didn't watch much of, but I did notice in the replay that Julian Love was down early in that fight and recovered pretty well and put a real hurt on Parabon. He bruised him up pretty bad. And we had Adrian Broner getting back into winning form there against Carlos Molina. Didn't seem to be a type of fight that's challenged him much, but he definitely showed that he's still game and still capable of putting a win together against a guy with a pretty decent record. But again, it's just not a Floyd available. Not that they would ever fight. It was also a fight where Broner went back to a more natural weight for him, so we'll see how he does with that weight. And it was ironic that actually all four of the televised fights went to decision, but every fight before that didn't make it past the fourth round. Every one of them was a knockout, TKO. Got Anthony Ogogo, a third-round TKO against Jonel Tapia. Ronald Gavriel beat Tyrell Hendricks by fourth-round TKO. Ashley Theophane beat Angino Perez by fourth-round TKO. Andrew Omotunde Kabidi beat John Shipman by TKO in the fourth round. Manel Bellows beat Thomas Gifford by second-round TKO. And Ladarius Miller beat Richard Colas Quesada by third-round TKO. And you'd think, you know, they might have shown a highlight or two from those fights, you know, just so we could see what a knockout looks like. But they didn't. I don't know why. Probably should. Anyway, that does it for the big fights from last week. Really wasn't much else. But for this coming week, we got, we haven't done the mismatch of the week in a while. And I thought I'd bring that back for a whole fight card. There's only two fights, but there's a 10-rounder and a 6-rounder. One's super featherweight, one's featherweight. And this is in Valletta, Paraguay, tomorrow night. Get this. We have Victor Cardozo Coronel. His record is 25-11 with two draws, 18 knockouts to his credit. He's fighting Arnaldo Elias Ramiro. His record is 3 wins. One knockout, and 32 losses with 15 knockouts of himself, and 3 draws. 3-32-3, fighting 25-11-2. And for the vacant Paraguayan super featherweight title. Pretty bad. But if you thought that one was bad, wait till you see the 6-round featherweights here. 6-round featherweights going at each other on the same card. We have Feliciano Dario Azuaga. His record is 85 wins, 23 losses, and 2 draws with 68 knockouts. And he is fighting a guy who we might as well call him poor Fabiano Paiva. Because he's 1-2-1. Had 4 fights in his whole career, only 1 loss. Actually, 2 losses, only 1 knockout loss. No knockout wins, and there's 1 win in the 1 draw. And that's not for a belt, but the guy with 85 wins fighting a guy with 1 win. I don't think that would ever happen. That's pretty bad. So, if you're in Paraguay, you want to see some mismatches, check that out. Over here in California, Los Angeles, at the Galen Center, Saturday night. It's going to be on ESPN. It's a big heavyweight matchup for the vacant WBC heavyweight title. Bermain Stivern, he's 23-1 with one draw, 20 knockouts. To his credit, his only loss was a knockout loss. Fighting Chris Areola, 36-3 with 31 knockouts. Only been knocked out once. And this is a rematch of a fight Stivern won the first time. Not sure when it was. I'm going to bring up the total records of these guys. But Areola got beaten pretty bad in that first fight, and he's looking to turn the tables this time. He's a former guest of ours. We asked him about his last name, too. It was kind of funny. Anybody who knows what Areola means would think that's kind of a funny name. We asked him about that, and he laughed, too. Thought it was kind of funny. Anyway, not really part of the story. Another heavyweight matchup, 10 rounds. Eric Molina has got 20 wins, 2 losses, and 14 knockouts, fighting DeVero Williamson, who's 27-7 with 23 knockouts, and I don't know if that's going to be on the televised ESPN card there, but I think they're only going to do the main event. We also have a light welterweight fight on that card between Amir Imam, who's 13-0 with 12 knockouts, and Jordinus Ugas, who's 15-2 with 7 knockouts. And really, that's the big event for this week. There's one other card worth mentioning. And that actually isn't even televised, but that's it's going to be Star of David Promotions out there in Brighton Beach, New York, on next Thursday. It's actually two big cards Thursday. And the main event there is for two different titles, the WBC United States Cruiserweight title and the WBC International Cruiserweight title. A couple guys are undefeated here. Stevens Bujaj, who's 12-9 knockouts, and Junior Anthony Wright, who's 10-9 knockouts. And the main event on the other card, actually I should mention Amanda Serrano is on that card. She's 21-1, 20 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw, with 15 knockouts. She's fighting Belinda Larraquente, who's 26-28, 9 knockout wins and 3 draws. That's a
good fighter.
Yeah, she's a really good fighter. There's two Serrano sisters, I think. They're both fighting. Also on Thursday, on USA Fox Sports 1, it is televised, we're going to have Antonio Orozco, also undefeated at 19-0 with 15 knockouts, fighting for the NABF Junior Light Welterweight title against Martin Honorio, who's 32-8 with 1 draw and 16 knockouts. In the co-main event there is Super Bantamweights Manuel Avila, 14-0 with 5 knockouts, and David De La Mora, who's 25-5 with 18 knockouts. So both interesting cards next Thursday night. If you got Fox Sports 1, you can watch them. But you've got to listen to us later in the recording, I guess. So that does it for the big boxing cards coming up this week. Alistair Overeem's back in the news, and it's not for anything positive.
When is it ever? You know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, this guy's got a dark cloud over his head.
We talked, I think, a couple weeks ago about, I might have mentioned this, that he's trying to join the Jackson Winklejohn camp in New Mexico. And I guess he has made that transition, but now it's coming out a little story that was supposed to be kept in the gym, apparently. He's now gotten out. Alistair used to be with the Black Zillions down there in Florida. And now one of their young prospects, a guy named Gilbert Burns, has come out and explained why he thinks Alistair left. Apparently he left the team after he injured fellow UFC heavyweight Guto Inocente during a sparring session. And it wasn't just a normal sparring session. This was a a guy who was recovering from a knee injury, Innocente, and just returning to training, and actually already had sustained a broken hand, and was still, you know, working out, and decided he was going to fight a little sparring match there with Overeem. And he was, even with one hand and a bad knee, he was still kicking Overeem's ass, basically, according to this Gilbert Burns story. That Overeem got mad because he was getting beat up by a guy with one hand, so he took Gudo down and blew out his other knee. And that's why Gudo hasn't fought in a while. We were all upset about it, and that was when Overeem left the team. After he left, the team got better, and we had better results. Thank God he left the team.
Well, you know, you said something earlier that was supposed to stay in the gym. I don't see why. I don't see why that had to stay in the gym. I mean, I'm glad it came out, and I feel bad for any other sparring partners in any other gym that he's in. I mean, how do you justify that?
Well, I guess it's kind of like going to Vegas. You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Well, it's for the most part, yes. I mean, I don't believe in the whole thing about one-upmanship in the gym or anything like that, but this is different. This is all to get. I mean, some guys just aren't good gym fighters. You guys know that. I mean, sometimes you can hold your own with people that maybe are better fighters. That's not the point. When you deliberately try to injure someone in a sparring session, to deliberately take the risk of just destroying their career,
Well, the theory, maybe they decided to keep it to themselves so that Overeem would be sure to move on to his next camp before it came out. So they wouldn't be stuck with a boomerang back there.
Well, I think who's ever running the gym could put an end to that real quick and just get out of here and then put out the word to everyone else. I mean, I don't think there's a rule in somewhere that says a gym has to accept someone. I mean, that's insane to me.
Also mentioned that Overeem used to get beat up by other members of the team, including Anthony Johnson, Rashad Evans, and Vitor Belfort. And he said he's an arrogant man. He's exactly how he looks to me. One thing is getting in the gym and talking to me or a younger guy, but another thing is go there and not talk to Rashad, Vitor, Tyrone Spong, and Coach Henry Ruft. He's cocky, and the team got better when he left. He's really tough, but he's not that monster that he appears to be. I saw him get beat up bad in training by Johnson, Rashad, Vitor, and Tyrone. And this is a guy, Gilbert, who's 6-0, so pretty tough himself. Dana White, another Dana White story. He's not ruling out signing Holly Holm. It's just back on the table, even though he said he's not dealing with her manager anymore. He says he's still open to the possibility. It's just a matter of getting a deal done. Same goes for Gina Carano, and there's a little tidbit in the story that makes me wonder whether this is a situation where they're waiting for Gina Carano's current contract to expire, because apparently it expires this June. The old deal with Strikeforce, which was transitioned over to Zuffa with the purchase Strikeforce back in 2011. Carano's obviously got a different type of contract than she would get today, seeing as they have to lure her out of Hollywood to get her back in the cage. So I would think that rather than renegotiate an old contract, they might just wait for that to expire and sign a whole new one. So, we'll see. Talked about Chris Lytle. Junior Dos Santos, speaking of broke his hand. So Fabio Maldonado has accepted the challenge to move up to heavyweight and replace him against Tom's buddy, Stipe Miocic, on May 31st down in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Maldonado said in a press release, "I've been training for a long time for this. I'm at 223 right now, and I would keep this weight for the fight. Fans will go nuts with this fight. He continued, I will go on his head, only any opening for him to breathe. His style is a good matchup for me, and it's going to be a great fight. His boxing is sharp, but mine is better." Miocic is 11-1, Maldonado is 21-6, and on a 3-fight win streak.
Well, I'll sure give Maldonado all the props in the world for stepping up on short notice, but wow. I get the feeling that could get a bit ugly. I mean, I think in a perfect world, Stipe, I'll just take him down and finish it on the ground pretty quick, because Maldonado has a chin and Stipe has a punch. That's not a good combination. Of course, the risk for Stipe is if he was so obsessed with Junior that he's going to be overlooking Maldonado. I don't think that'll happen, but that's always a concern. I don't think Marcos will let that happen, but
we'll see. Well, speaking of Brazil, too, Vitor Belfort has apparently been cleared, or okayed, I guess you could say, as far as fighting in Brazil. The director, medical director down there, said he can fight here no problem, but he can't use TRT at all. Since he doesn't have a license to use TRT anymore, he will be tested like any other fighter. So, there's a chance that one of these Brazil cards coming up, we could see Vitor Belfort on if he wants to have another fight, like you said, and doesn't mind waiting in the wings there for the Chris Weidman fight he was supposed to get. So, he's obviously going to fight the winner of that Weidman versus Machida fight, too, eventually. But depending on what happens and where that next fight will take place, maybe he'll have to do it in Brazil if he doesn't get cleared to fight in Nevada or somewhere else. And the medical director also said every commission has its standard. We don't know which test he did, what was the result, so I can't talk about it, which criteria they're considering in his case. Every time a fighter that tested positive in the past applies for a license in Nevada, he's tested again, and we will adopt that here as well, he continued. This is an interesting criteria, and we'll also do it, but Belfort never tested positive here. And that brings us to time to add our guests here to the call. Two Alexanders here, Alex Perez and Alexander Cook. Today. I just put out a blog on this May 31st fight there. Out there in Whippany, New Jersey at the Birchwood Manor. And Alex is going to be the main event. I don't think they've announced his opponent yet, but we'll have to ask Alexander. There it is. There's Alex. Same call here? How are we going to ask you different questions? You got the same name.
You can call me Alexander, and I just call him Alex.
So, Alexander, it's your show there, Kia Boxing Promotions. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the promotion itself and this May 31st show?
Well, basically, Key Boxing Promotions, we started about 10 years ago after managing and training and promoting fighters for 30 years, but decided to do another show May 31st back in Whippany, where kind of started it all 10 years ago, and obviously, you know, like to use local talent. Alex fought for us before, and just wanted to, get the local fighters back out there, give them an opportunity to fight in their hometown. And we just feel really great about being able to give them that opportunity. So it's going to be Saturday, May 31st in Whippany. And just really looking forward to having, you know, basically a local crowd with local fighters and giving the fans what they want to see.
All right. We have to mention, guys, my name's Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line. He's our boxing expert. And Psychic Tom Pat.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How you doing?
We'll get to that later. Alec, do you know who you're fighting on this card yet?
No, not yet.
All right. And how did you first get into boxing?
Say that again?
How did you first get into the boxing game?
Oh, I was about 8 years old. My mother put me in boxing. She said I was a little knucklehead, so she threw me in the boxing game. I've been history ever since.
All right. And who's the toughest guy you ever fought so far?
Toughest guy I fought, the guy named by the name of Corey Peterson.
What did he bring to the table that gave you trouble?
Say that again?
What gave you trouble out of him?
Oh, he was just a tough fighter, man. He just kept coming, man. Every time I hit him, hit that guy with anything but the shit sink, and he just kept coming forward. Tough guy.
Right.
I was like around 7-1. I was like around 7-0. He was 7-1. Only loss he had was to Devin Alexander, and that was he was real tough.
You just had Devin on a few weeks ago.
Excuse me?
We had Devin on the show a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
And what do you like most about boxing?
Excuse me?
I guess both of you guys can answer this one. What do you like both about boxing? What do you like best about boxing, I should say?
Oh, what I like best about boxing? I don't know. It's like second nature to me, man. I love it, man. I've been doing this since I was a kid, on and off. I took it serious after my first son, around 18, and, you know, I just love it, man. The best thing about boxing to me is I'm addicted to winning. I love to win.
That's a good thing to be addicted to. There's any good addiction, I guess that's one. Now, Alexander, how about you? What do you like most about boxing?
What do I like? I like the excitement. You know, it's something about having two guys in the ring, and it's not a street fight. It's more of I call it ballet with punching. You know, you can really see the difference between a lot of the amateur fighters and the professional fighters like Alex Perez. I mean, when you watch him in the ring, you can see the skill level that is involved. It's an artwork, and it's called the sweet science for a reason. You really can appreciate how they study their opponent, how they feel them out, and what they're going to do next. It's like chess. And that's why I really like to watch, you know, seasoned veterans like Perez, because, you know, it's not just going in there and trying to kill your opponent. It's really looking at what you're going to do next. And that's kind of one of the reasons why Alex is going to, you know, be the next world champion.
You know, and I got to agree with you when you say that this is our end of the tornado here. And, you know, I like to watch boxing, you know. I always love to watch it, speak a little knowledgeable about the sport, because you can have, you know, very engaging conversations. But sometimes I don't mind watching it with people that maybe are trying to learn things and maybe learn to pick up things. Because, you know, and watching, especially guys that I've seen. Lady that I used to train years ago, and she really liked to fight in her life. And one day she actually called me up and said, "You know what I was doing today?" And I said, "Well, God knows. I have no idea. I'm afraid to ask you. I was watching the fight tonight." She said, "I could see some of the things you were instructing me on. And it made her appreciation of the sport that much higher. Because she was seeing things that it's almost like the naked eye can't see."
And I actually noticed, looking at your record, Alex, you fought another one of our guests, Francisco Figueroa, back in 2012. Got a unanimous decision against him. For some reason, they say you do have an opponent here on BoxRec. It looks like he's related to you, Jonathan Perez.
If I can make a comment on that, right now that is not set in stone. You know, we're obviously, there's nothing set until there's a contract. There's a couple different opponents we're looking at this time. But as, you know, as per the fight team, you know, nothing is set in stone until they even get in the ring. So, you know, we do have a couple opponents we're looking at for him. I'll be honest, the toughest thing right now is a lot of people are not willing to fight Alex, you know, because, you know, he does have a tough name, and, you know, rightfully so. But, you know, I know he's willing to step in the ring and just about anybody, and we're trying to find him the right opponent. And, you know, just for him and for us, you know, to put on a good show. So, but as of right now, that is not 100%, just to clarify.
And I guess he's probably not related, he gets respect.
No, they're not. They're not related.
All right. Well, what's your ultimate goal in this sport, Alex?
Full-time fighter is to be a ultimate, my ultimate goal is to be a world champion, you know what I'm saying? That's my ultimate dream and goal, you know what I'm saying? That's everything to me right now.
All right. And do you have a favorite fighter out there? Either, or I guess you could do both today and at all time?
I mean, I got about five favorite fighters. I got a coming up, I was looking at, I admired Alexis Aguayo, Tito Trinidad, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Roy Jones, and of course, right now, I got Money Mayweather, man.
Hagler was a big hero of mine growing up, too. It's the first fight I ever bet on and lost.
Jeez.
Of course. And it was a fight I thought he would win easily. And he was such a legend growing up. I grew up in Massachusetts, and he's from, he came up through the ranks to Brockton. He was a big home state hero for a lot of us. And that was tough to see
him. Not by any and anybody. Not looking for just no payday. You just want to put his heart on the line and just show who was the best. And that guy right there was willing to fight everybody, even going in people's backyard and pull out decision wins or knockouts. That's why I love him for that.
Yeah, I actually talked a lot, too, with his trainer, Vinny Petronelli, and I interviewed him on the show a while back. And one of the best stories he told was how they used to go down to Provincetown in Massachusetts and run on the beach, and Marvin would actually run in combat boots. So,
yeah, I heard that one.
Pretty tough thing. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's really the reason why he was so good with cardio anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So.
And is there anybody out really like to fight? Anybody out there you'd really like to fight or want an opportunity against?
I mean, I would like opportunity against Keith Thurman. I would love to fight him, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, it's the best in my division, man, you know what I'm saying? But, I'm just going to take one fight at a time. And right now I'm focused on, May 31st and see what's, knock down whoever is in my way, man. And then keep pushing after that.
I'm taking a look at your record back then. And one of the fighters that you fought a couple of years ago was a guy that I've had some experience in covering and watching. The guy by the name of Joel Castillo from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is not too far from where I live. I live in Philadelphia. And I've seen him come to Philly on a couple of occasions. You beat him by unanimous decision. And Joel, I always said, would be a better fighter if he utilized his jab. I remember covering one of his fights, and he was coming so square in and so aggressive, but he wasn't jabbing his way in. And I remember he was just screaming, just double jab, damn it. I wanted to get into my gym so bad because he has potential, and he's tough, and he's strong, and he's got a good gym.
Oh, yeah, he knocked out a couple of undefeated fighters. He was a tough fighter. He was definitely a tough fighter. He was a tough fighter, but the thing with him, he takes too much. I hit that guy with everything, and he keep coming in. Like you said, he's very square. So everything I make him do, I'm going to close my eyes and hit him with everything. He squared up, and he relies too much on his power. But he knocked out a lot of undefeated fighters. He's a tough dude.
Your last fight, I guess, that year that you fought Kenny Abril, I've covered him. Frankie Figueroa, guest of ours. So I see a lot of the names on your record of guys that I recognize, guys that I've seen, guys that I've covered. Darian Ford at the Blue Horizon. You fought at the Blue. Shit, I might have covered that part.
Who?
You fought at the Blue Horizon back in...
Yeah, definitely. For somebody by the last name of Ford. Yeah, no, it was like no contest. He headbutted me like 4 or 5 times. I had a big old gut gush under my eye, so they had to stop.
And Floyd
thought
he had it bad. 5 times. Jeez, this guy must have wanted to get disqualified, huh?
Say it again? He broke up.
That guy must have wanted to get disqualified. Is it 5 times with a headbutt?
Oh, no, yeah, 3 times.
I said Floyd thought he had it tough against Maidana.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Alexander, how did you first get into the fight game, doing the promotional stuff?
I started following my father around since I was a baby. When he was married in fighters, I was working corners with him, and Tommy Parks, actually. We used to work corners for some of my dad's fighters. And then when we started doing the promoting, I was kind of a gopher, helping set up chairs, labeling chairs, stuff like that. And then I just started taking more of an interest in the business aspect. Actually managing a couple of my own fighters, and then obviously helping, promote. The shows with my father, obviously he's still the boss and he's still called a lot, but, it's a passion. It's a love, and I just get more and more interested in the business aspect and trying to make the company grow. And as far as the promotional aspect, in 10 years, we've seen a lot of people come and go, and, we're still going strong. So, this seemed to be show number 23 for us. So, we're pretty happy, and we consistently go at least a couple shows every year. Some are only 2 a year, some are 4 or 5 a year. So, we're pretty happy that we can put on, great shows with, local talent at an affordable price.
Awesome. And I know you guys are familiar with a buddy of ours going back to when Fight News Unlimited was on MySpace, a guy named Dan Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
He's pretty involved in the promotion too, right?
Well, he got involved with us, from the start, kind of helping out just like I have, and then, he kind of branched off and has started his own stuff as well. But obviously, we're all still a team. We're all still a family. We all work together. He has his own Brick City boxing team, but he still helps us out as far as the promotions as well. Absolutely.
Yeah, I took him to his first UFC fight out there in Newark. That stuff's done. Pretty nice venue there.
Yeah.
77, I think it was. Way back when. But, Alex, do you have a favorite punch?
No, I've had all my punches are favorite punches. My favorite punch is to put you on your butt punch.
There you go.
If I put you on your butt, then that right there is my favorite punch of the night.
All right. And how about role models? Do you have anybody inside or outside the sport that really helped you out personally along the way?
Nah, my only role model is my mother.
Well, that's a pretty good role model. as we saw the other day, Kevin Durant talking about his mom helping him out. You know, it's definitely definitely a big deal to have a good mother in your corner.
Definitely, man. My mother's my everything. My mother's my mother, my father, everything all in one.
Now, what's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
Mental state. You gotta get your mental 120% ready for war. That's my main thing.
And what's the scene like in New Jersey for you? Is there pretty decent gyms and everything? It's obviously kind of like Philadelphia. It's kind of known for the fight game there. So what's that been like having a good area for competition in it?
I mean, it's all right, but I just got a great team, point blank period. Right now, I got a good team. I got My trainer by the name of Manny, his nickname like Speedster, hella fast hands. I got a good conditioning coach, Easy. I mean, and those guys right there, you know what I'm saying? I put them all into them, because especially my guy Manny, man, it's like, you know, he helped me as far as the mental game. He helped me get ready on that level. So I mean, my team is basically everything, man. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, that's who I'll go. As long as my camp is good, I'm ready for whatever.
Alright. And what's been your best moment in the sport so far?
My best moment is when I went to Puerto Rico and fought for the WBC Cobalt Championship.
Well, what made that one special?
It was my first professional title.
All right. And your first time out of the United States, or no? You went to Dominican Republic there for your fourth fight, it says.
Oh, yeah, I went to Dominican Republic, so yeah.
What's that like, going out of the country to have a...
It's cool. I mean, you know, I did that as an amateur, so it wasn't really nothing new to me. But, you know what I'm saying? It's cool.
And Alexander, I guess I should ask you too, what's your ultimate goal with all this?
You know what's funny? You know, everybody always has a dream of having, you know, a world champion under their belt. It's, as far as, you know, our level, you know, we call it the club show promoting. I mean, there, anybody that's involved in the game knows that there isn't any serious money at this level. We do it for the passion, for the love, and, you know, if there's a couple bucks to be made out of it, great. You know, but, you know, to see even, you know, guys like Alex Perez be able to fight, you know, close to their hometown and have their fans there, that's where the enjoyment comes in. You know, our slogan is featuring the next generation of champions, and that's exactly what we do. You know, we've had a lot of guys who fought for us over the years who ended up, you know, fighting on pay-per-view and HBO. Prime example was Paul Wallach. I mean, Paul Wallach was basically pulled on our shows. And then, he moved on to, some bigger and better things. But, you know, that's kind of what we do. We feature the next generation of champions. So we wish nothing but Alex the best of luck and hope he gets to that level. And, you know, as far as our ultimate goal, hey, if we get a couple world champions out of it too, great. You know, if not, no big deal.
Okay. And what do you think about the state of boxing as it is today? And is there anything that you would change about it if you could, if you're in a position to change the whole sport?
If there was something I could change, it would definitely be a national commission. You know, I think some of the issues we have with the commission nowadays is a big problem. Some states, it's a lot easier to, you know, promote a show in versus others. You know, my father's done shows as far as down in South Carolina, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. I'm not going to say anything as far as bad or good, but some states are easier than others. We all know that. There's a reason why there's fights in Tennessee and only certain fighters fight there, you know, because they can't get, you know, approved somewhere. So I think that's one issue as far as a commission, getting everybody on the same page. And then the other thing is there's a lot of people involved in this sport that shouldn't be involved. You know, there's a lot of people that say they're trainers, that say they're managers, and we both know they're full of it. You know, they fill out the paperwork and they get their license and they say they're a manager or trainer. And a lot of these kids out there get thrown into the fire and they get hurt. And that's something we don't want to see. We don't want to ever see anybody get hurt. You know, we're, even though it's a combative sport, we don't want to see anybody actually get seriously hurt. You know, there's still, it's competition. Yes, it's entertainment, but we don't need to see anybody seriously get injured. And I think that's one of the big problems we have. There's a lot of people out there that don't care, that are looking for a quick buck.
Right.
You know what? It's sad to say, but I can't agree more with you on that. I've seen it. I trained in Philadelphia for a number of years, and I see guys come into that gym and have a towel over their shoulder, and they would just, if they would saw a kid working out on his own, and I trained at a rec center, and, you know, usually there was one or two trainers there. But if you were working with a player, if they were in there and had somebody sparring, and another kid was in there and really didn't know anybody, maybe he was coming in, skipping a rope, and shadow boxing, hitting the bag, you'd see these guys almost like a piranha come over and, hey, kid, I'm going to drink water. When you skip these guys, you got to do it like this. And I remember one guy, I can see a few things right now, and Terry was an instigator. And Terry, he had one young son there, and he put the kid on like a sit-up bench or something like that. The kid was like 10 years old, maybe 11. And the kid was not really a good worker. And Terry didn't know how he was treating this kid. He was going to get the kid hurt. But he would tell the kid, I want you to do sit-ups for the entire round, all 3 minutes. And the kid wouldn't be able to do it. And he'd be holding on, just trying to almost pull himself up real slow. So he would get off during the one-minute break. I don't know what's going on. I go on there. I'm 27 years old. You know, I'm training because I got something coming up. And I'm doing my sit-ups, and I get off, you know, between sets. This kid gets back on. Now I'm ready to do my second set, and he's sitting there on the thing. And I think his name is Rafiq. I'm like, Rafiq, are you done? Can I get this? No, my dad wants me to do 3 minutes worth of sit-ups. But the Rafiq, you're sitting there doing 20 seconds. Either shit or get off the pot, kid. And Terry pulled shit on me one time because I was coming back off a badly sprained ankle. And I wasn't supposed to be sparring, but one of the guys that he was working with was just coming off a KO loss. And he wanted me to get him in the ring, just moving around a little bit. And he goes, hey, did you get in the ring with him? I said, you know what, yeah, I'll get it. I'll move around with him a little bit. And my trainer was saying, no. He goes, you got a bad ankle? No. I said, dude. I said, I'm going to take it easy. He's coming off a knockout loss. I'm going to keep it easy. He goes, I'm just worried Terry's going to pull some shit. Because the guy didn't speak English, and Terry got in his ear and said, hey, man, you better watch out. This guy's coming to be making team off you. So I said, this guy that. So now this guy comes in there, and I'm boxing him. I'm a brawler, but I'm boxing. So I'm big. I don't want to hit him in his head. He got knocked out 2 weeks prior. Next thing I know, I think it was like 3 consecutive knee blows. This guy's bending my arm. This guy was fighting me like McDonald was fighting last week. And now, if my legs are going, I hadn't been training. And this guy's like, kill him. And I got him in the corner, and he goes, yo, what the hell are you doing? You can't understand me. So it was over. My trainer jumped in the second round. And I'm in the sanitary, and I'm like, what is your fucking problem? I said, me and you got a problem now. I said, when I come back to this broken ankle, me and you can settle. Oh, I ain't a boxer. I said, boy, it's funny you can train guys and tell guys it's hard shit. I said, me, you got a problem. We're going to settle it. And they actually had to put me out of the head to go to another gym and still shit back down. Because they knew it. I was coming, not only was I coming to the guy that, you know, suckered me, I'm coming to the guy that put him up to it. And this guy called himself a trainer? Yeah, he's exactly who he is, Amanda.
Well, how about you, Alex? What would you change if you could change anything, and what do you think about where the sport is today?
I really have nothing to change, man. I'm in here to win it. As far as right now, right now, I've been seeing a lot of bad judging going on. So, you know, I definitely changed that. Other than that, I really don't, you know, I don't really pay no mind. So, but as far as the judging going on, You know what I mean? You got these judges like crushing a lot of hearts, man. You got, you know what I mean? So, you know, mentally that goes back to the mental state, like, you know what I'm saying? Some fighters won't take a loss like that well, you know what I'm saying? You got, so at the end of the day, it's like, you know what I mean? If you ain't judging right, you don't need to be judging at all.
Right. Well, not only bad judging, but bad reffing, too, we've seen. You know, there's a lot of instances of that. One of the most recent ones I remember was Bartholomew's fight there against Mendez, where the referee should have been right next to them when the round ended and said, break, you know, got them away from each other, and ended up having to do a rematch because the punch was technically after the bell.
Oh, yeah, I seen that. I think that was on ESPN, if I'm mistaken, right?
Yeah,
I seen that one.
Timothy Bradley fight with the judging, the first one. It had to result in a rematch.
Definitely that one, too, as well. That's the judging.
I mean, you know, the only thing I can comment on that is, you know, it doesn't matter if it's boxing, NFL, you know, NHL, NBA. We all know there's, you know, a lot of politics and money involved, and that's going to be with anything. But, you know, in boxing specifically, we have a bad reputation as far as, you know, people are saying things are fixed. You know, it doesn't happen like that nowadays. It's too easy to get caught, you know, with social media and everybody having a cell phone, and, you know, it'll never work. I mean, back in the day, yeah, there was definitely some rigged fights. But nowadays, that doesn't happen. The only thing I can say is maybe some bad judging as far as a rig. But you'll never get all three judges. All it takes is one, though. I mean, we all know it. It's either that or some of these judges don't really belong there, just as Alex said. You know, maybe they're either too old or they don't have enough experience and they shouldn't be on the championship level. So, you know, it's unfortunate. It's something we have to deal with.
Where, you know, it's not an outright situation of a fix. You have a lot of situations where these same judges work on the same card, and they feel loyalty to the promoter that's always given them the spot on their card. So they're going to go for the promoter's guy rather than who he's fighting. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then I will defend boxing until the day I die, though, only because we do the shows. And, yeah, we see the same judges and the same referees, you know, and obviously all the same inspectors every show we do. I mean, you know, we know them all, you know, on a first-name basis, and they know us on a first-name basis. But, you know, we would never expect, you know, favoritism in any way for any of our fighters. But you know what? It is kind of one of those unfortunate things. I mean, it's always who you know and not what you know.
Right. Well, is there anything either of you want to add before we let you go?
I mean, I definitely add something. I want to give a big shout-out to Kid Box Promotion, man. You know, these guys have been behind me 100, you know what I'm saying, since the beginning of my career. So I definitely want to give a big shout-out to them. And and as far as anybody that's following and supporting, make sure y'all stay tuned May 31st. You know, Alex Perez, not going to get nothing but fireworks, man. And I thank you guys for taking out your time, man, and giving me the interview.
Awesome. That's usually the first clue that we get that we have a good guest, is when he remembers to thank us.
Absolutely. I mean, I just want to basically repeat what Alex said. I mean, I want to thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to allow us to come on and, you know, quote-unquote, help promote the show. But, you know, also I want to thank Alex, because I know it's very rare for, you know, promoter to thank a fighter, but, you know, Alex is he's a big name, and we're proud to have him on there. And you know, we're just happy to be able to give him an opportunity to, you know, fight for his fans and also help build our fan base as well. So, you know, it's a great thing for the community, it's a great thing for the state, it's a great thing for boxing. So we just want to keep moving forward.
Awesome. And both of you guys can give us a little bit of how people can find you online, if you got Facebook accounts or websites. I guess you can promote that too if you want.
Okay, guys, follow me on Instagram at AlexPerezBCB, and then on Twitter as well at AlexPerezBCB.
All right. How about you, Alex?
as far as Key Boxing, it's just on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's all Key Boxing, K-E-A Boxing. And obviously all the information about the fight is on keyboxing.com. Tickets, info, news, the works. So anything you need can be found on there.
Well, it's been good talking to you guys, and best of luck, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Have a good night.
So there we have it. The big show is going to be May 31st down there in Whippany, New Jersey. And great job by both guys there. Good interview. Sometimes it's tough to manage two guys on the same call, but that worked out well. Everybody still with us?
I'm still
here. Oh, we lost Tony. We lost Psychic Tom, looks like. I don't know when he dropped out. It doesn't give us the time. But we do have a little bit more to cover as far as news. Pretty much got through all the fights, but we got a couple tidbits of news. I know I talked last week about Anna Juniton making her big debut in MMA, and she was successful. She ended up getting, I think, a third round TKO, or, yeah, it was a TKO. I think, let me find the story here before I speak out of turn. Here it is. She got a third round stoppage over Egyptian kickboxing champion Aya Sayed Saber in front of a very large crowd. And it was the fourth stop of that card. And she struggled in the first two rounds of the scheduled three rounder and then ended up getting taken down a couple times. And she got a number of submission attempts tried on her, but she was able to keep out of them, and included a guillotine choke in the second round, which had the crowd really holding their breath. It was actually in the Philippines, where Juniton is from, so she took everything and ended up weathering the storm and got the fight taken care of in the third round. She got to show her grappling skills and solid punches. And actually, I think it was on the ground where she got the win. She got a mounted position and just rained down a bunch of strikes, punches and elbows, and that got the referee to stop the fight with just less than a minute left. So congratulations. Big win. Another little bit of a boxing story here. We've got, we talked about the Super 8 heavyweight tournament down there in Auckland, New Zealand. Samuel Peter is out due to a calf injury, so they've replaced him with a Kiwi fighter named Ant Nansen, who's probably the least experienced fighter in the mix. But he does have his fair share of domestic kickboxing titles and has boxed professionally, but he's definitely going to be a huge underdog. And they do have the field pretty much decided. It doesn't have the very last guy they're supposed to announce soon, but they're going to have Asim Rakhman, Bryce Rattani Coe, Kali Meehan, Michael Sprott, Martin Rogan, Enzo Butler. I'll be on that card. And speaking of heavyweights, we had a big heavyweight loss in the boxing community this week. Jimmy Ellis just died. He was 74 years old.
Yeah, saw that. Maybe that's complete. He was a skilled fighter. He was another guy that had a lot of good skills. And he, he just happened to be in the wrong era.
And, he was 74 years old and actually did a lot of training when he got out of the game himself. He's a good friend of Muhammad Ali, sparred with him. He died at a Louisville hospital and had Alzheimer's disease. recent years. He was the son of a preacher and loved singing gospel music. Also held the WBA heavyweight title from 1968 to 1970. Lost to Joe Frazier to fight the Unified Bantamweight Championship in 1970. And in 71, he was stopped by Ali in the 12th round. Retired in 1975. And Ali said, in the world of heavyweights, I have always thought that Jimmy was one of the best. So, definitely be missed. Misha Tate's back in the news. She's actually trying to get a fight with Gina Carano, but at the same time, she's saying that the idea of Ronda fighting Gina is a joke. She says, women's MMA has been working to legitimize ourselves for so long. We're finally in the UFC, and we're getting some credibility. Don't take that away by putting a fight together that is based entirely on looks and has little to do with skill set. And that's Ronda Rousey has actually come out and talking some smack about The Ultimate Fighter. Says she no longer watches the show. She says, now that I know how much bullshit is in it, I don't support it. I used to watch it all the time. Now I won't watch it. And she said she was turned off by, quote, the blatant disrespect the production has for the athletes, unquote. So that's pretty big jab at the whole promotional setup there that the UFC puts together for this show. They do it themselves. So this is not just a shot at the it's Pilgrim Studios that's doing the show now. But it's also, you know, this is a Zuffa production, too. When they started The Ultimate Fighter, they couldn't get it on TV unless they were willing to do the production by themselves. So they came up with this Tough Guy Productions company that's a Zuffa subsidiary. So technically, Ronda Rousey's taking a shot at the UFC, too, in addition to the show itself. But she doesn't pull any punches, as we know. She said they don't know the first thing about fighting. They only know about reality TV, and they treated us like we were Real Housewives of Atlanta and not real athletes or elite athletes that should be respected. And I don't support people like that, so I don't watch the show anymore. Now, Dana White obviously had something to say about that. He said, it's no secret that Ronda didn't have a good time on The Ultimate Fighter. When you're on a reality show and you're caught up in the moment and you do things and you say things without thinking, sometimes when it airs, you're not 100% thrilled with the way you acted or the way you looked. It's happened to me, too. It's part of reality television. And not everyone is crazy with reality TV, and it's no secret that Ronda butted heads with people in production and on the show. You can't change her mind. That's the way she feels. So, well, he's defending the show there, but it's kind of funny that he decides to kind of bash Ronda back there a little bit, talking about she's not thrilled with the way she acted. Well, she didn't say that in her complaint, so he's kind of inventing the fact that that's her concern, but that's not really the fact. Kind of weird there. But that's how Dana White operates, I guess. I don't actually know if this happened at the Mayweather fight, it did. The Argentina's tax agency, 17 tax evaders at the Mayweather fight. And I guess a lot of people down there claim to have some small incomes, even though they paid up to $7,500 each to attend this fight and travel to Nevada from Argentina to see their home country guy, Marcos Maidana. And so all 17 of those people have been removed from a list of low-income Argentines and must now pay taxes consistent with their large expenses. One of them also had a $150,000 Porsche. So that's it. Probably the only one that would top that was the guy who got busted for the bank robbery from a Q-tip that got thrown in the trash. He had a bloody nose in the boxing match. There's a glory fight news here. Mirko Krokop and Pat Barry first fought in the MMA fight in the UFC. Both of them lost their last fights in glory. Now it looks like they're going to try to set up a match between the two of them. Pat Barry just lost his last fight there just this weekend. This last weekend, or Friday night, I think it was. And Crow Cup. It was a while back, but looks like now they're trying to do this rematch. And it was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen as far as the way Pat Barry acted in that MMA fight. He kept hugging Crow Cop because he was his hero growing up watching. So he got knocked out in his comeback to glory. So it's going to need a lot of luck and a lot of training to make sure it doesn't repeat that against Crow Cop. And another news story about the Floyd Mayweather fight. A bunch of people were trampled because there was some mayhem at the end of the fight. Some kind of partition tipped over, and people thought there were shots fired. So as people were leaving, it turned into a stampede, and 24 people went to the hospital, and 50 were treated in total. So nobody seriously injured, I don't think. But that was one of the odd points of the show. And this is kind of a big story, but we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week. Main Event filed a lawsuit in New York against Al Haymon, Golden Boy Promotions, and Richard Schaefer, also Canadian boxing promoter Yvonne Michelle and Showtime. And all of these people have been sued for allegedly committing acts that include fraud, breach of contract, and tortious interference. And we've had Kathy Duva on before, from Main Events, and she's a level-headed lady. She's been in the big fight family for a long time, and she knows what she's doing. And I think she's got a good chance of being successful in this one. And basically it all surrounds this fight that was supposed to happen between Stevenson, Adonna Stevenson, and Sergey Kovalev. And apparently Duva says that her and Yvonne Michelle struck a co-promotional agreement by email on January 23rd. And a day later, an HBO executive offered Duva and Michelle a $2.4 million rights fee, and she said there was a consummated agreement for a co-promotion. Then all of a sudden, Al Haymon got involved, and Showtime, and everything got shot down. So they're claiming that there was violations of the federal Muhammad Ali Act, and Showtime made an offer to Stevenson for a Hopkins fight that exceeded the Kovalev offer, and it was a clear intent of disrupting the Stevenson-Kovalev fight. So we'll see how that goes. Maybe some of the dirty dealings in boxing will get corrected here, and some of these people will figure out how to work together.
Well, Luke, I am jumping off. I think time's off anyway. So I think it was cut off anyway.
Yeah. I don't know if we're still recording, so.
Okay. Well, I still got to jump off. I got a few things I got to run tonight, so I do get my beauty sleep, and God knows I need it. So my Tornado Maniac, Tornado is signing off for the night.
All right. And that's all we have for this show. And until next week, thanks for stopping by, folks, and for Tom, enjoy the fights.
All right, and I'll see you today.